Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison. I'm a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me to talk about, you know, another one of these ho-hum losses, I guess, is fellow Niner Noise contributor, Chris Wilson. Chris, how we doing, man?
Well, my friend, that is a complex question. As our regular listeners likely know, not a lot of this podcast is scripted, and perhaps to its detriment when I go on 30-minute monologues, but especially the opening where I have no idea what I'm going to say before you ask me that question. So let's break this down. In the negative column, we had to suffer through our third straight blowout loss to a rival.
Correct.
In what's looking like the Jim Tomsula era 2.0, or maybe 3.0, where no one has any idea what they're doing, no one seems to care, and like a 10-point deficit in the fourth quarter, like forget it. You might as well just call the game right now. Can we just go home?
Yeah.
Now, on the positive side, I woke up this morning, so that's always good. I don't know how you feel about that, but for me, it's good.
I'm good with it.
The 49ers aren't totally out of it mathematically, although they've been out of it spirit for weeks.
Sure.
And my main man, Taysom, that is definitely a positive. So tell me, how cute was it when they let him actually play quarterback and worked the pocket on a third down? And we were so kind to him to just leave Michael Thomas totally uncovered. And I don't mean like, quote unquote, Michael Thomas uncovered, like closely covered.
Like nobody was
running. I mean, no one was within 30 yards of the guy. And he's just running across the field uncovered.
And he still let our defensive line sack him.
Yeah. And Taysom only knows how to throw it to Michael Thomas. So he's just locked onto him. He's just staring at him. Locked onto him. Staring. 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 And then suddenly he remembers he's a special teamer and a fake quarterback, and he just stands there and gets sacked by King Law. It was just unbelievable. Like, what was going on through his mind? I have no idea. And then he fumbled twice, too. So that was great. Gotta love it.
Yeah, it was good.
That definitely made my day. Taysom's gonna Taysom. And then finally.
Okay.
I have to remember to tell myself it's okay.
Yeah.
It's just a game.
This is true. It is.
But then I remember, no, it is not just a game. This is 49ers football. And now I'm really disappointed in myself and angry with myself for even saying that. So in summary, I'm terrible. How about you?
That's how you acquired that? Anyway, wow, we are like on brand within the first 5 minutes. So really good. So if you were playing with your Niner Noise podcast bingo card, you may have already won here in the...
taking them all?
The beginning moments of the... you got most of them. I don't know. I'm not really keeping track.
I didn't say anything about PFF, though.
Oh, there we go. Now you've won. Anyway, so yeah, the Niners lost. What is that? Three in a row? I kind of lost count.
Yeah, something like that.
This one is probably like the most bizarre of the three, I would venture to say. I'm sure there's an argument that we could make against that. But by some sort of strange miracle, the 49ers were actually in this game until like the very end. There's a lot of reasons for that. But I think the defense played really well. Even in those moments when Drew Brees was in there, I would say that the defense's performance was good enough to win. But Nick Mullins in the offense, they looked really good on that first drive, and we were talking about it in the Niner Noise chat during the game about, you know, that looked good. And I think I even said, you know, as soon as the drive was over, I was like, that's cool, but let's see what happens when we get out of the scripted plays at the beginning. And well, they managed only two more field goals for the rest of the game. Ended up losing the game 27-13 in New Orleans on Sunday. So we mentioned last week that the final score was closer looking than the game actually was. I think this was the opposite of that, where the final score makes it look like they lost, like they were getting dominated in a lot of ways. They really didn't. Again, there's lots of reasons for that. Like, you know, Drew Brees going down and you know, Jameis Winston having to play quarterback for most of the second half and these sorts of things. That's the kind of year that this is for the San Francisco 49ers. They fall to 4-6 heading into their bye week. And as you mentioned, while they're not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs, the rest of the division is tied at 6-3. With the Cardinals of all teams mathematically in first place based on their division record. So who'd have thunk it? It would probably require a win-out scenario for the Niners to really make any real noise. You know, if they lose any more than like one, maybe two more games, it's probably over for them at this point. So that's not what you want, but there you go. For you betting folks out there, they also clinched the under in their preseason win total. So huzzah. if anybody cares about those numbers, I saw that somewhere and I was like, oh, cool. 10 games in and we're not going to get to the 10, or the, I guess it was 11 was 10 and a half. 11 was the,
yeah, 10 and a half. Yeah, I think,
so
yeah.
There you go. Injuries, because of course,
why not?
Because we have to, because it happens every,
we should just make this a segment.
It has become
permanently
a segment.
And even if there's nobody injured, we'll just say nobody somehow.
And we'll cheer. There will be much rejoicing. We might not actually do the podcast one that week if we make it through without any major injuries. We would just be so surprised. Anyway, Jamichael Hasty, his rookie season is over. Going to the IR with a broken collarbone. I think that's like a 6 to 8 week type of injury. I don't know what the numbers off the top of my head, but there are only 7 weeks left in the season for the 49ers. There's a pretty good chance he's not coming back for this year. Jonathan Cyprian also going to the IR with a hamstring injury. That makes, at the current moment, 16 players on the injured reserve. I don't have the number in front of me in terms of how many players we've put on the injured reserve in total. All I know is there's 16 on there right now. I got to think the number is like in the mid-20s or more in terms of players that we have put on there at some point throughout the season. There are several players like Richard Sherman and Raheem Mostert who figure to come off before the next game in Los Angeles, but that number just remains too high. We got a new addition to the practice squad injured reserve list, which again, I did not know existed until this season, but that's, again, the type of year it's been. Practice squad safety Jarrad Maiden goes to the practice squad injured reserve list, joining rookie wide receiver Juwan Jennings. And then also this week, defensive lineman Eric Armstead and Javon Kinlaw were added to the COVID list. If it's actually the virus, obviously that's a problem. And they may not be ready to play by the next game, but if it's just the sort of quarantine because of they were close to somebody, something like that, then they'll probably be okay to go by the time the Niners play again, which is not until November the 29th. So there you go. In other news, water remains wet. Any responses to any of this fun here, Chris?
Just another week, more injured players, and we're just waiting for those reinforcements.
Yep.
As if it's going to matter, but keep on waiting, Chaney.
Yep. So one last bit of news that came out just today, and Kyle Shanahan had talked about the possibility of this happening. So bizarre situation with edge rusher Tack McKinley, as they call him. Last week, something like that was released, waived by the Falcons, and there was conversation. And I think Shanahan even said, you know, mentioned in the presser last week that they had put a claim on him, but the Bengals had claimed him and they're lower on the claim list. So the Bengals got him. Apparently, a couple of days ago, it came out that he did not pass his physical, and so the Bengals waived him again. So he's waived twice within a very short period of time. But it came out today that the Niners claimed and were successful in their claim of McKinley. And so he will hopefully be on the team. Obviously, he has hoops to jump through. Like, this time he has to pass his physical.
I mean, do we really care about that?
Well, you know, maybe not.
Yeah, hurt anyway, so it's only a matter of time.
yeah, I guess so. And then he'll have to, you know, do the COVID testing and sit out the 3 days or whatever that is. You know, it was a pretty low risk, potentially high reward type of situation. He was only owed, like, $875,000 for the rest of the season, which even for the Niners in their cash strap situation is not that much. He is a free agent at the end of this year, which means that he could be someone that they could sign at a low number in the offseason if he's just kind of like, you know, he's good, but he's probably better as a rotational guy. And then they'll be able to bring him back with guys like Bosa and other players next year. Or they lose him and they probably get a compensatory pick in 2022. So, yeah. never a bad thing. So if the season ended today, the 49ers would hold the 12th pick in the draft. And even with six games to go, it kind of feels like that's the direction that a lot of our conversation is going to go. Obviously, we're going to continue to talk about these games from week to week, and who knows what's going to happen. Any objections to that at this point, Chris?
I'll say sort of, because I don't think that it's the direction we should be thinking about, but it's the direction the team has forced us to think about. And for the record, I'm not sure where you stand on this, but I'm very anti-tank for draft picks, very anti, quote-unquote, suck for luck, etc. First, just as a basic rule, tanking is a loser mentality. And like Confucius once said, we want winners. It was funny. Because it wasn't Confucius. I don't like tanking in general, especially intentionally. Teams don't usually tank intentionally. But fans who like root against their team, I've never really understood that for any player. But particularly under this regime, tanking is absolutely meaningless given our history of draft shenanigans. Because just if we lose our way to a better draft pick, it doesn't mean that we're going to take the right player in the first place.
Yeah.
Or a player that wouldn't just be on the board if we just won all of our games. So I don't see what the point is other than being a loser. And I can be a loser on my own without doing it intentionally.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think I'm not on board with it's like, let's lose games, blah, 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 blah. It's going to be a weird NFL draft in 2021 anyway, simply because there's less college football being played and a lot of players who are opting out of the college football season. And I saw a couple of cornerbacks for South Carolina that are considered high potential high draft picks just opted out for the rest of the year. They played the first part and they just decided, okay, well, that's enough. Unless you are one of those people who's of the opinion that we need to be grabbing one of these top quarterbacks, which I don't necessarily subscribe to that idea, but we'll see. Frankly, I don't think there's any way that the Niners are going to be bad enough to be in position to grab one of those top quarterbacks anyway, because even at 12, that's probably too far. And unless they're going to go mortgage the future for a player.
Oh, which will do.
Maybe. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm not thinking about it in terms of like we have to think about like, you know, the season is over and we should just lose the rest of our games. But I think, you know, one eye on the offseason, maybe, so to speak, while still thinking about the opportunities that the rest of the year can provide. I think that's kind of the way I'm thinking about it, if that makes sense.
Cool. I didn't want to have to fight you.
For sure. Let's get into a more depth on the Saints game and get into the one up, one down segment for today. Chris, I will start with you. And I was even nice enough to let you have your up here because I'm just that good of a guy. So, Chris, who is your up for the Saints game?
Oh, that's very kind of you. I would have taken either, but he is definitely my number one up. And that is one rookie wideout, Brandon Ayuk, who was inaccurately targeted, I believe, 14 times, but hauled in seven receptions for 75 yards and touchdown. So far this season, he has racked up over 500 total yards and five touchdowns in eight games in a bad offense. So multiply that by two if he was playing a full season, and that is, you know, 1,000-yard season and 10 touchdowns. And that's not too bad for a rookie, especially in this offense.
Not at all.
But he looks every bit like a future number one wideout. You can tell that he's still raw and he still has a lot of room to grow, which is actually a good thing. I think one thing he really needs to work on is his deep ball game. He doesn't really go up to catch the ball. Well, actually, he really doesn't go to catch the ball at all, but he definitely doesn't go up to catch the ball at his highest point. And I mean, he's got a little bit of size that he can use to his advantage. So I think it's something they need to work with him on in the offseason. But just say beggars can't be choosers, and he has exceeded my expectations by far. And I can't wait to see him with his fellow Yak Bros.
Yeah.
And then honorary never gets to play Yak Bro, Richie James. If he's allowed to play ever again after fumbling a punt.
Yeah, I was going to say, Richie James might be permanently back in the doghouse at this particular juncture, given his response. I think it's the combination of his response to C.J. Beathard's wildly underthrown pass to him, combined with the very next thing that he did was muff the punt that basically ended the game. So there you go.
I think I probably would have responded the same to CJ Beathard pass, though.
No. Yeah, I think independently those things are maybe not as bad, but together they look, it's not a great look for sure. But
I didn't really think about that. I mean, obviously you don't want to fumble a punt, you never want to do that. And I can understand how he's sort of put in this situation where last week he just blew up and this week he really didn't. I mean, he was on the field a lot, but they just didn't really look at him at all. And
yeah,
it's got to be frustrating for a guy who's like, I showed you I can do it. Like, can you just let me do it? And then, you know, they got Trent Taylor and they put him in there. And, or, you know, first of all, I have no idea why they called that play on third down and 20 something. Like, we didn't need 75 yards, even though he was 75 yards open. And CJ Beathard can't throw it 50 yards.
It was third down.
Yeah, it was third down, but you know, we didn't need all those yards. We were in four down territory there. I don't know. I guess you wanted to see how far CJ could throw it. And the answer is not very far.
Not far enough. But his is the answer.
Spiral is very tight. So I guess that's good for something. Apparently not picking the ball, which should have been picked. But I can understand how Richie James could be pretty annoyed by the fact that he was hoping to have a repeat performance and he wasn't given the opportunity to do so.
Sure.
So obviously, he was upset that he was so open. He was underthrown. And
that's some of the worst prevent defense I've ever seen in my entire life.
Everybody was open.
They just let him run by him. They're like, okay, well, it seems fine.
And the wide receiver on the side, I assume is Ayuk, he
probably
ran to the sticks and then like ran like 5 yards past and then just cut back to the outside and he was just totally uncovered. But CJ had already decided good that he's going to like half arm throw the ball as far as he could, which is not very far. It was a very, very good looking pass, just not very accurate.
Just didn't get where I needed to go.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this was about Ayuk. I 100% agree. Great player. At this point in his career, him having so much of the spotlight on him is probably not the best thing. Now, again, as I mentioned last time, he's managed to somehow overcome having a lot of focus on him as he has throughout much of the time that he's been on the field. If you think about it, you know, he missed the first game. Kittle got hurt and Debo was already out. And so he came in for, you know, his first, two games, no Debo, no Kittle. Kittle comes back. You know, there's a couple of games there in the middle where they're all together. And then, you know, Debo gets hurt, Kittle gets hurt. And suddenly he's back to being like the focus of the offense as a rookie. And I think he's eventually probably, like you say, going to get there at this point. I'm not sure that he's when he is the lone focus, it's just not enough offensive firepower, as it were. So, but you know,
definitely not at this point in his career.
To his great credit, that he's managed to be really effective in spite of that, for sure.
Yeah, so I'm just excited with somebody who looks excited.
Yeah, absolutely. And fully endorse the let's get him out there with Kittle and Debo and Raheem Mostert, people who can take some spotlight away, because we were really looking forward to this whole like you can't cover everybody kind of thing coming into the year. And it's not happened. Not one time this year. Well,
it's going to be so much fun. Yeah.
The Rams game, I think. Is that it? Yeah, I think that's it. And probably their best game of the season that they've played so far.
So do we have Reed for that game too?
Oh no, he wasn't in that game. So that was, but I think the Rams game is about as close as we've come to that. Speaking of which, Jordan Reed played out of his mind. On Sunday, it was really good as well.
I mean, you think that was a difficult catch? I mean, whatever, dude.
A little bit. Nicholas, make some easy throws, man.
He wasn't making a lot of them, that's for sure.
No. Ayuk had one of those, too, where you go, what?
Why are you? Don't throw it to the ground, man.
Like, this isn't basketball. They can't. There's no bounce passes. So, yeah, 100% in agreement on that. I'm going to stick with the 2020 rookie class for my up, and I'm going to go with the other first-round draft pick, and that is Javon Kinlaw.
You only have one choice.
Yeah, the pickings were slim. We could probably just mention all of the players that had good games and be done with it. We mentioned the other one, which was Jordan Reed, Javon Kinlaw, and then, you know, Fred Warner was Fred Warner, and I think that's about it. But Kinlaw, I think very little doubt that this was his best performance so far of his rookie season. He's definitely been on the upward trajectory throughout the year, you know, getting better and clearly putting in the time. As I mentioned before, the defense was playing really well on Sunday and, you know, held the Saints to pretty low numbers. Part of that was short fields, and time and time again, they were just put in bad positions by both the offense and the special team units. But they, you know, held up as well as they could have, I think, under the circumstances. To hold that offense to 27 points, I think, was pretty good, especially because basically two of those touchdowns were giveaways on, you know, interceptions or fumbles in the Niners side of the field. Yeah, again, Kinlaw's been improving as the season's gone on, and I think Sunday was just the first time that we had some, like, counting stats to show the impact that he's having on the field. Three tackles, his first NFL sack, and he also had another half sack and two additional quarterback hits. His problem is, and this isn't really even his fault, is that it's going to be difficult for anybody, but mostly 49er fans, because his career is going to exist under the cloud of him not being DeForest Buckner. The school of thought is they traded away DeForest Buckner, and they expected Kinlaw to come in and be DeForest Buckner. Well, that definitely wasn't going to happen. I don't know that anybody would say that he's anywhere in that neighborhood, but at the same time, there's also been a lot of losses along that defensive line, and I think Kinlaw is going to be a player that's going to benefit heavily from Bosa being back and the rotation on that defensive line picking up, and it's going to benefit a lot of people, but Kinlaw for sure in the years to come.
He definitely shouldn't have picked that number.
Yeah.
I should have told him to do something different. Just like any other number, but that one, because you're just not that guy.
Too bad he couldn't wear number 3 like he did in college.
Yeah, I'm totally fine with that.
That would have been awesome. Any other thoughts there before we move on to the down?
Kinlaw was definitely one of my ups this week, and probably my player of the game on defense. And my only question was whether sacking Taysom Hill counts as a quarterback sack or not, but apparently it does if he's in the pocket. So
it does, yeah. In this
and
case,
then you get another half, and yeah, I mean, if only Eric Armstead would just show up and play football, then maybe the two of them next to each other would be pretty good.
For sure.
It's sort of weird just seeing these four fat guys try to run down quarterbacks on third and long.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have our heavy set in there?
Oh, no, that's Kerry Hyder.
That's the only set that we have.
This is our, yep. This is our NASCAR package. That guy's
exactly right.
275 pounds. No big deal. Let's...
Taylor on that side, maybe.
let's pause here for a moment while we're talking about this before we get into your downs and talk about what I've seen referred to as the worst roughing the passer call in the history of the NFL. This may be hyperbole, but I think it needs.
I don't know.
I think it needs to be mentioned.
If we're in a more important part of the game, like a more important game, I think it would go down as the worst ever. That was just so bad.
So Javon Kinlaw got his first sack, but Kentavious Street got his first NFL sack ripped out of his hands by the referees in the game on Sunday. When he did literally everything correct.
It was perfect.
Literally everything. You know, he hit Drew Brees. He knocked him down. He clearly made every effort to land next to him so as not to fall on him, and was still flagged for a roughing the passer penalty that ended up leading to a Saints score. And I don't know if you've seen the video of his face when they called it. And he's just like,
oh, yeah.
What? Like,
similar to Richard Sherman's face. Like, tweeting about it. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Him and Solomon Thomas were both apparently pretty adamantly like tweeting about like how stupid that was.
I don't know if you saw all 22, but the umpire was just calling him sacked. And the referee just ran in there and just talked the umpire into it. He like sprinted up there and it was so late you could only catch it in one of the two all 22s because the other one had just like the play was over and it went to the next play. But he runs in there like so and he's like and he was, you could tell that he was like trying to argue that, oh yeah, rough the pass. And he's like, oh, okay. I mean, that is his job to be looking for that kind of thing. And I'm like, what?
Well, yeah. I mean, if the guy who's literally standing right there doesn't want to call it, then.
Well, because it's not. It's like, obviously. And I don't understand. How is he talked into it so easily? Like, it was right in front of him. And he should have said, no, it wasn't.
I'll tell you exactly why. Because Drew Brees got up and started limping off the field.
Oh, was it the whining?
No, he didn't say anything. He just sort of like tucked his head in like really close to his body and just
I'm sad.
Just kind of started like old man strutting like towards the sideline like because it was I think it was third down, right? So it would have ended the like he was supposed to be done and he wasn't going to make anything about it, at least not say anything.
I'm trying to think it might have been like second down. I mean, he was just like I'm done. I'm like I'm too old for this.
And he's usually pretty quick to turn around and look for a flag when he thinks he's supposed to get it. And the fact that he did not tells you something. Like, this is the man whose neck was made of rubber when Ahmad Brooks sacked him several years ago, and he turned around and looked for a flag immediately. Brees had no thought about this. Like, he was too hurt to think about milking it.
That's the crazy thing. It's like, he didn't even hit him that hard. He did not land on him.
Nope.
And somehow he broke his ribs.
And punctured his lung.
Maybe he shouldn't be playing football. I don't know. I mean, he's a little old.
And his offensive lineman pushed straight into him even further. Like, if he had just let him go through, then it's probably fine. So anyway, I just wanted to pause and talk about that because we would be remiss if we didn't mention it.
Tried to block it on my head because it was just so stupid. Yeah, and honestly, really at the time, I'd already given up long, long ago. So I'm like, yeah, it's about right.
Yeah.
Like, did Priest throw that out of his pocket? Or how does it work here in New Orleans?
Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, all right, on to your down for the game. I'm sure there's plenty for you to talk about, Chris, so I'll let you go.
There's so much to choose from.
This is the Chris Wilson monologue time, so go.
I think I already did that, and I don't want to be any more down than I already am, but I will give Evil Shanny my down because he's very deserving of it. A couple weeks ago, maybe last week, that sort of determined that Saleh is just not going to figure it out in certain aspects of being a defensive coordinator. Shanahan is slowly moving in that direction, or I'm wondering if he can be a great offense coordinator and then a good head coach at the same time. Because so far he's not. I mean, he's a great offensive coordinator. He's one of the smartest minds in offensive football today, or you can make arguments. He's game was a lot different in the past, but especially in the past game, you know, he's one of the best ever. But his questionable head coaching has turned him into a questionable offensive coordinator. And it's like I've been saying for a lot of season, he just has too much on his plate. He needs to learn how to delegate like a leader does. And it just feels like he's going through the motions. He's not playing to win. They score a touchdown, they punt on the next drive, and they get the ball back. And then short field, you need to put the ball in the end zone. And it's end zone or bust, because if you're going to win this game, you're going to put 14 points up on them right now. Put 10 points up on them now, you're not going to win this game. I was saying it at the time. I was like, there are no field goals here. It's end zone or bust. And what does he do? He just ends up calling a handful of bad plays. And I think there might have been a penalty in there as well. And ends up kicking a field goal. And I'm like, all right, well, that's about it. He just doesn't care. And he's just like, all right, when can we get to the bye week? I mean, it's like been saying that for like 3 weeks now. Well, you know, all of our guys are going to be back after the bye week. Well, it's not going to matter because you've lost too many games because you're not coaching very well in the meantime. His play calling is just so predictable. And, you know, I've joked about it in second half play calling. You can tell exactly what he's going to call depending on whether the Niners are down or if they're up or if it's a neutral game script. But it's just way too easy for a smart or average defense to know exactly what the Niners are doing. And if they don't know what the exact play call is, then they know enough to get as many guys as they can on the line of scrimmage to break up those runs around the edge, whether they're flies or whether they're to a running back who's not McKinnon, because McKinnon apparently just runs the ball in the middle all the time, gets stuffed. So Shanahan's mission to rack up 30 rushes a game is meaningless and stupid. And he must be smarter than that. I'm hoping that he understands that it's a correlation and not a causation. He must be smarter than that because he couldn't have been so good as an offense coordinator and not know that. And he's just not focusing on what he does best. And that's what leaders do. They know what they do better than anybody else. And that's what they do. They don't do the things that they're not good at, like personnel decisions or scouting or drafting, all those things that Shanahan is horrible at doing. And he needs to get back to his roots. And his roots are being an excellent, if not the best, offensive coordinator in the NFL. Because his work as a head coach has brought his entire game down. And now, honestly, I don't even think he is a good offensive coordinator because he's not calling good plays. And yeah, injuries, you know, it's another excuse, yada, yada. I mean, other teams are able to play through injuries and not look as bad as we do. His offense is just so dependent on two things. A breakaway running back, like we had in Breida or Mostert, because you know our offense line is not going to be good, and a running back like McKinnon is not going to be able to function in it. And then you need a quarterback like Jimmy G, who can play lights out on third down under center. And if you don't have those two things, because you're going to get in a lot of bad third down situations, then you're not going to win games. So part of the podcast, while I was making you wait, I was just looking through some of Shanahan's coaching stats with and without Garoppolo. So Shanahan is 27-31 as a head coach, and that works out to a 46.6% winning percentage, or just about 7-9 over a 16 game season. With Garoppolo, Garoppolo and the Niners is 22-8 when he starts the game, 73% winning percentage, which would be 12-4 in a 16 game season. Shanahan without Garoppolo, 5-23, 17.8, less than 3-13. When Garoppolo starts the game and doesn't get knocked out and actually finishes it, he's 21-5. That's 80.7% win percentage, 13-3. Shanahan without Garoppolo for the entire game is 6-26. And even though that's horrible, because Garoppolo had the one win in which he didn't play the second half, Shanahan's winning percentage actually goes up to 18.8%, but he's still around, actually, I think he's exactly 3-13. So it would be crazy for him to just let Garoppolo walk at the end of the season. And I know there's been some talk in the last couple of days that he's been semi-quoted as saying that he expects Garoppolo to be the quarterback for next season, but I don't necessarily think that all those quotes are taken extremely in context as much as they could be. And
well, I mean, I read the whole thing and that's what he said.
Yeah, maybe in the interview, but just in his, just seeing how he handles him and seeing how he has handled him over the last few years. It just is hard for me to believe he would make a decision today. You said that you read the transcript. Did you say definitively he will be our guy next year? I think it's something like we expect him to be here.
Yeah, expect. I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's media talk for sure.
Yeah, like give me a little room to move out of this if I don't want to in the future. Just that combined with the fact that he doesn't seem to like him for some reason. I'm not really sure why. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but it's what everybody says too. So, and you just sort of get the feeling too, because he calls different plays for him than he does for his other quarterbacks. And I don't know, it's just, you don't want that kind of drama between your quarterback and your offensive coordinator, especially when he's winning so many games for you. So, I mean, obviously, Garoppolo's not winning all those games. I mean, he didn't win the NFC championship game last year. That was a Mostert win. But at the same time, he's put into all these horrible situations, and he is an elite third down quarterback like no one else in the NFL. And he's proven to be, because he has to be. And whenever he's not, then all the fans hate on him. And if you put other quarterbacks in the same situation with this offensive line, they wouldn't last very long either. So just the more that I see Shanahan sort of flounder without Garoppolo, the more that I know that we need Garoppolo healthy to be able to do anything. Because under Lynchahan's tenure, we haven't been able to win games unless Garoppolo has been under center. So if he's under there, we're winning games. And if he's not under there, then we're losing games. Shanahan's really got to pick it up over the last handful of games and show that he can be a good offensive coordinator again. Because we know he can. He obviously can. But he needs to learn how to delegate and give some of the head coaching responsibilities to other individuals that are on his staff who are able to do the job and focus on what you do better than anybody else. And if you don't do that, then we're not going to win a lot of games. That wasn't a mile long. That was pretty short. For me, your thoughts?
Relatively speaking, sure. Mostly reasonable there.
I'll take that.
I think there are a handful of quarterbacks that would probably be fine with our offensive line.
Absolutely, but are any of them available? Are any of them on our roster?
If we switched, you know, if we put, you know, Mahomes or maybe Aaron Rodgers, you know, those types of top tier guys on this team, I think that it would be just fine. But yes, I think obviously given
Wilson or.
I didn't want to say it. We're not allowed to talk about that.
No, he's fine. Bubble water, maybe. Maybe he'll share his secret recipe.
Yeah, bubble water.
Those guys aren't on our team. That's the problem, though.
Right. No. I know what you're saying. Just to be clear, what you're not saying is that there are no other quarterbacks that could run this offense in the NFL. What you're saying is there are no other quarterbacks on this team right now that could give the team a better chance to win, which doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't other options in the world, just that currently the best thing to do is to continue to run it back.
Absolutely. But I go a step beyond that and say that you have one of the better options for your offense on your roster and signed for multiple more years for not that much money.
Yeah.
You would be crazy to get rid of him for nothing.
Sure.
Of course, in no way am I saying that he is Mahomes. I thought that went without saying, but this isn't like Madden or something like that, you know?
Yeah, right. But, you know, there'd be somebody who will come after us and be like, what about Ben? Yeah, we know. We're very aware of what Patrick Mahomes can do. Thank you very much. But, yeah, I think you're right in that regard. It'll be very interesting to see, regarding the quarterback situation, what happens over the next couple of weeks and into the offseason. Talking about this before we started recording, but it has come out today that apparently Garoppolo has a no-trade clause worked into his contract just for next year. And so he couldn't be traded without his permission until 2022, which is very interesting. And so, as you say, it would make a lot of sense to just like drop him for nothing, because you're going to lose something there. So I don't know. That'll be very interesting to see what happens with that. But yeah, I think it certainly would benefit Shanahan on the larger scale to figure out a better way to sort of run the team and still try to run the offense. I think that would certainly be paramount in his situation. But I am actually going to sort of dovetail off some of what you were saying for my down, and that was the running game without Raheem Mostert, which is just cratered over the last couple of weeks. So the Niners managed just 49 yards and 25 carries. That 49 yards includes a negative 8-yard run by Ayuk early in the game. Jerick McKinnon ran the ball 18 times for 33 yards. That is 1.8 yards per carry, which is very bad. Jamichael Hasty, 3 for 13, which is 4.3 yards per carry before leaving with his injury. That would be better, but again, he only ran the ball 3 times, and he went out with an injury. Just couldn't get the running game going for various reasons. You know, offensive line play, poor timing, the fact that the Saints were ready to take it down, that kind of thing. But
12 guys in the box, yeah.
Yeah, that kind of thing. It wasn't just this week. It's been the last several weeks. So the Niners ran the ball for 197 yards against New England. What was that, a month ago? Feels like forever ago. In a game that they won, 197 yards in that game. Since then, since that New England game, they played Seattle, Green Bay, and now the Saints. They ran the ball for 52, 55, and 49 yards on 22, 17, and 25 carries. That, my good sir, is a whopping 156 yards on 64 carries, or 2.4 yards per rush over 3 games.
Which we lost all of.
Yes, which we've lost all 3.
Because we kept on running.
Maybe. I mean, there's certainly more to it than just we just kept on running, but that certainly exacerbated other problems, like the fact that, you know, in the Green Bay and Seattle games, our defense couldn't stop anybody. You know, we put them, and then, you know, and with the Saints game, we put them in bad positions, that sort of thing. So as you were alluding to, Mostert is a clearly important piece for this team. He covers up for a multitude of offensive line sins. The offensive line doesn't even have to be very good, and he is clearly good enough to make up for that. It is a little strange, however, that Jeff Wilson had such a good game in his one start that he had. That's a strange kind of conundrum that I don't quite understand, because that would suggest that Jeff Wilson is somehow in Mostert's level, which I'm not sure that you could make that case. It's one game. It could just been like a freak thing where, you know, they were blocking really well that game, and so he followed suit, kind of thing. It's a mystery. In Shanahan's offense obviously falls apart without even the worry of running the ball. Once a team figures out that it has the Niners number, two things happen. One, Shanahan will probably continue to try, although his rushing numbers have been a lot lower over the last couple of games, although 25 on Sunday was not great. But it also takes away other things, you know, like the play action and the ability to for the motions and all the other stuff that he's got going on to really actually have any impact on the game at all. Because if the defense decides that it doesn't have to worry about the run, then it's just going to key up on all those moving parts. Not good.
Like any offense, especially Shannon's offense, it's best when you don't know what the next play is going to be.
Generally speaking, yeah.
And when everybody knows what the next play is going to be and your offensive line sucks, because the Niners have a horrible offensive line. I mean, they have one good offensive lineman. They have one half-decent offensive lineman. They have three horrible offensive linemen, including one who will just allow the cornerback blitz just over and over and over without doing anything about it. And suddenly, somehow, it's credited to McKinnon or something like that. I don't even know. But if you're playing against an average defense and they know that you're going to run the ball whenever you can on first down, first and 10, they're going to stop you. Your team isn't that good to be able to overcome that. Very few teams are. Now, when you have that outside running game and your offensive line's a little bit better and you have a home run hitter like Mostert, then that's when Shanahan's offense can really take off, because you can stuff him a couple of times and then he breaks one. And then you can stuff him a couple of times and then he breaks one. And then you have 14 points. But when it's just stuff, and then the break goes for 7 yards, that doesn't really do us any good. So the Niners in this game, for some reason, ran the ball an equal amount of times on first down as passing the ball. So 14 rushes, 14 passes. They were able to manage a grand total of 0 first downs on their first down runs, and 43% of their first down passes resulted in first downs. And that is a strong suit of Shanahan's offense historically, and that was a major, major part of his record-breaking offense before he came to San Francisco, and he's given up on it for some unknown reason, and maybe because it worked too well. He's just waiting to break out again when he gets Matt Ryan behind this offensive line. Like, that's going to work very well. So he just needs to cut out his stupid 30 runs per game objective, and he needs to be a little bit more difficult to predict. I mean, it's really just that simple, because I mean, even look on the first drive. Yeah, it was a nice drive, but it also had 3 third-down tries, so they needed to convert on that drive. And on average, you're not going to convert 3 first downs in a row. So on average, that drive is not going to work. And if you're not getting chunk yardage and you're not moving the chains on early downs, you're going to be stuck in bad third downs. And you're going to end up kicking the ball, because you love to kick the ball in all situations. And it's just not a recipe for success, as was shown over the rest of the game. So, yeah, I mean, it'll work every once in a while. For the Niners, it worked once the entire game. And they were given some nice short fields that they did absolutely nothing with. And they kicked a couple field goals. So congratulations on that. But his predictable play calling has just got to stop. He's putting his offense in way too many bad third down situations, and his quarterbacks are getting killed because our offensive line just cannot block. They cannot block when opposing teams rush 3 or 4, like 5, like forget it. This is an effective offense with all the personnel on the field when you have Mostert and Jimmy healthy. Now he has neither. All he has is predictable play calling. And his offense, in a technical term, sucks. And it makes the Breida trade even dumber. Because, you know what, Mostert isn't the kind of guy who's probably going to play every season, a full season, all 16 games, or all 19 games. So you need another guy out there who can run with Mostert-esque speed, not quite that high than a similar style runner like Breida. Just getting rid of him for pretty much nothing doesn't make any sense. And the only thing that would make less sense is if they gave up Garoppolo for pretty much nothing. So I'm still hoping they don't do that, and I'm hoping that his words were stronger than they appeared to be earlier today or yesterday, and that if his plan is to move away from Garoppolo for whatever reason, he's going to learn pretty quickly that with Garoppolo in the game and on the roster and available, that he's going to be winning a lot more games with him than with some random rookie quarterback or C.J. Beathard under throwing Richie James.
Well, let's hope it's not CJ Beathard.
I don't know. This is the year. He's got to make the decision, right?
Yeah, I guess so. So we don't have a whole lot left to do here because, Chris, thankfully, next week is the bye week. It took a really long time to get here. Last year, it came really fast. This year, it felt like it took forever. So we'll just...
Predictions or what?
Kind of. Yeah, let's talk really quickly about, generally speaking, what's like one thing you want to see during this bye week.
I don't want to lose.
What?
I definitely don't want to lose.
Done.
No injuries. Yeah, that's about it. I mean, do I really think Shanahan's going to realize all of his mistakes? No. It'd be nice. But at least now he doesn't have an excuse that he doesn't have players because he's been calling for week 12 for weeks and weeks, and now it's here, and you haven't given us too much the last couple weeks, so you really don't have an excuse now. And hopefully with guys like Sherman in there, that Shanahan will have to step it up a little bit to not upset some of these veterans who are playing in some of their last seasons of their lives, and they don't want to be playing for a losing team that isn't trying to win. So I'm looking forward to these guys coming back. I'm looking forward to them lighting a fire underneath the team on offense and defense, even though the defense did play well last week.
Yeah.
But more than anything, under Shanny, to get him in the direction that he was going last year and not in the direction he's going this year, because it just feels way too much like 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago, or, you know, and I thought we were over this. I thought we were on the way up. And obviously injuries have taken toll, and injuries will. And
yeah,
turnovers have taken toll, and turnovers definitely will as well. But at the same time, you should never be in a situation where people are looking at you like, you don't care. You know, it just doesn't seem like it cares to me. It just seems like you wanted to get to the bye week. It was a winnable game, but you had to try, and you didn't really try. And I want, actually, I think a couple of the NFC West teams are playing each other, so they can't both lose. But I want all the NFC West teams to lose. When I was looking at how could the Niners possibly make the playoffs, which is just absolutely absurd after what I've just been talking about for like 45 minutes, right? But Seattle, yeah, they still have to play Arizona, the Rams, and San Francisco. Arizona has to play Seattle, the Rams twice, and San Francisco. And the Rams have to play San Francisco, Arizona, Seattle, and then Arizona again. So these teams are going to be playing each other, and they can't both win.
Yeah, the Cardinals and Seahawks play each other on Thursday night this week, and then the Rams have the Bucks on Monday night.
Yeah, so unfortunately, they can't both lose, but I would like them to both lose.
Correct.
I don't think the Niners would have to win out, but they have to bypass one of those three teams. That's really what they'd have to do, because they're not going to bypass one of the teams in the South. And if they bypass one of the teams in the West, they're probably going to bypass the Bears. So they're really only a couple of games out of it. And after this week, there'll be a half game less out of it. Maybe it could be a good week for them just to sit back and watch some other teams lose. I just wish that the NFC West were all playing good teams this week and not each other.
Well, I mean, the Rams are playing the Bucks, who looked pretty good on Sunday, and then we have some interdivision beatdown. So I don't know how that works, but yeah, I'm definitely with you on the no injury thing. I mentioned, you know, they're not mathematically out of this, you know, 2.5 games out of first place behind basically the rest of the division, which is kind of wild. They will be 2 games behind somebody when this is all said and done. The trouble is, as you notice, they have half of their games against the division. They have 3 games against the division teams, Los Angeles to start, and then they have the Cardinals and the Seahawks for the final 2 games of the season, with the Bills, the Washington football team, and the Cowboys smushed in between. So, you know, I'm seeing at least 2 more wins there. thanks NFC East for being terrible. And that's got to be a starting point, but they're going to have to win some games that they're not expected to win, is really the long and the short of it. But as far as the question of during the bye week, again, staying healthy, I just think the most important thing is figuring out ways to, again, you want to continue to think about winning games for this season, but you also want to start thinking about, you know, who are the players going to be that are going to stick around for next year and then years after that. Players need to start realizing that given the situation that they're playing for jobs in 2021 and beyond at this point. So, you know, figuring out if a guy like Tack McKinley is going to be worth keeping around. They don't have any cornerbacks on the books for next year. Who's going to do that? Are you going to re-sign Sherman at this point, given what he just went through? You know, or is Jason Verrett a long-term answer? I think more is made of that. Like, obviously they have control in a lot of ways over what they do with like Emmanuel Mosley. And they can decide that Akella Witherspoon can be kept around, although given his status the last 2 weeks, that's...
You've already made that decision, right?
That's definitely not happening. So there's a little bit more wiggle room there than I think often is made of it, but there are decisions to be made. So I think it's time to start thinking about that a little bit and start, you know, thinking like, what are we doing with Tarvarius Moore?
Yeah, at least they played him. That was one thing I was happy about.
Yeah, that was nice to see him out there and with Jimmy Ward.
Yep.
You know, figuring out what's the long-term solution in other areas all over the team. Like, what are you going to do? Like, figure out how to make it work and start thinking about players that you know are going to be here, players that you think might be here next year. Start thinking about that a little bit over the course of the bye week and through the last six games of the season. That's that, because prediction time is canceled for this week. Other than to predict, Chris?
What, that we won't lose? Or that Jimmy Ward won't intercept the pass? They hit some in hands.
Wow. Yes, predict that we won't lose. That is our one collective prediction. Niners won't lose this week.
I feel good.
I feel good. I feel great about it. So,
thank you for talking me through my sadness.
No problem. That's what I'm here for. This has been another edition of the Niner Noise Therapy Session. Another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. As always, check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49er news and analysis. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. And until next time, let's sound that bye week horn, 49ers.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.